Good morning, everyone. I'm David Mandel. It's Saturday, March 11th, 2023. And today we're going to be talking about accessible transportation, which is a very important topic. And I am going to turn my speech off so VoiceOver doesn't talk all the time. Okay, here I go. All right. So I want to begin by talking about, you know, why am I qualified to talk about this topic? Well, I began advocating for public transit, gosh, in the early 1990s. And now I'm serving on the transportation and I just joined the Pedestrian Environmental Access Committees of the American Council of the Blind. And I'm fortunate and very privileged to serve with Gene Lozano, who's here today. And Gene has absolutely done incredible, masterful activity when it comes to making sure that we have decent environmental access in this state. We are very fortunate to have Gene, and he's been working steadily for, gosh, how many decades, Gene? 3 decades at least? You've done so much work. Yeah, four. It's just amazing. And I'm also a member of the Transportation Subcommittee of the California Department of Aging and Community Living Advisory Council, which is affectionately known as DACLAC. And I chair an ad hoc state committee, Accessible Transportation Definition Work Group. And finally, I'm a member of the Accessibility Advisory Committee for AC Transit, which is a local transit district here in the East San Francisco Bay Area. So we're going to give a brief presentation, and then we'll open it for questions and comments. And I just want to make sure that today we're not going to talk about how horrible transit is, because people do that all the time. So we're going to skip the gripes and the whining and the moaning and groaning. And we're going to what I hope we can talk about are the barriers that people face, that you all face when you're taking any fixed route or paratransit. And, you know, what solutions might you suggest for improving transportation in California? Because we need to look for improvement and we need to work for it. And we have a long way to go. We've made some accomplishments over the years, but we have many, many, much, much more work to do. First and foremost, accessibility is a civil and human right. For most people with disabilities, accessibility means independence, spontaneity, and freedom of movement. When a transit network is fully accessible, anyone should be able to navigate it without assistance. To date, no transit network in this country is fully accessible or universally designed. Regrettably, for the most part, accessibility is too often treated as merely an afterthought. Shockingly, current federal law does not require accessible wayfinding. There is a legal concept in the Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA, known as effective communication. We in ACB believe that effective communication includes accessible wayfinding. All information given to non-disabled people must be provided to people with disabilities. Currently, this is not happening. Most public transit advocates talk about the need for and the right to affordable, reliable, frequent, and predictable public transit. However, accessibility goes far beyond those requirements. Many questions and concerns come to mind. Let's first consider fixed route transit. Later on, we will talk about ADA paratransit. Is fixed route transit available whenever you want or need it? Quite often, transit riders are like Cinderella, rushing to catch the coach before it turns into a pumpkin at midnight. Is fixed route transit easily reachable? Or do you have to walk on sidewalks filled with cracks and cross a busy 5-lane street filled with potholes to reach your bus stop? Are there sidewalks where you live? Are bus stops miles apart or fairly close together? Is your bus stop easy to locate? Is fixed route transit easily rideable? How easy is it to find the fare box or card reader? Can you easily find a seat or the exit door? Does your transit agency offer frequent local service and direct routes to many sought-after destinations, such as grocery stores, senior centers, and medical buildings? Can you easily locate subway station entrances, navigate the concourse to the fare gates, pay for your ride and enter the area that leads to the platforms, go from the concourse to the platforms, find where to catch your train, enter the train and find a seat, exit the train and find the correct escalator, staircase, or elevator, locate the exit gates, locate the correct station exit. Above all, it's important to remember that a transit network starts from your door or origin and ends at your destination's door. It does not start or end at the bus stop or subway station. In other words, a transit network encompasses and includes the neighborhood's infrastructure. What is accessible wayfinding? Websites, mobile applications, printed materials, and/or signage, including tactile and large print maps that provide information and schedules regarding the location of bus stops or routes, subway and train station entrances and exits, and the location and/or status of transit vehicles. Textures, electronic beacons, design concepts, or any other product, service, or procedure that is utilized to provide navigational assistance to, from, or within a transit network. Websites and electronically prepared documents must meet all applicable provisions of Section 508 of the Federal Rehabilitation Act or Level AA success criteria set forth in the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines, WCAG, whichever offers the greatest accessibility for people with disabilities. Printed information that is designed to be public-facing or that is likely to be requested by a member of the public must be made available upon request of a person with a disability in an alternate format that is accessible to that individual. In accordance with ADA requirements, consideration should be given to providing the document in the format requested by the individual, but if providing the document in the requested format is not practical, the agency should work with the individual to provide the document in a format that is accessible. Facilities and signage must meet applicable guidelines set forth in the ADA accessibility standards as promulgated by the U.S. Access Board and or California Title 24, whichever standard offers the greatest accessibility. Other products and technologies must meet all appropriate and applicable accessibility standards. However, at this time, there is no comprehensive legal national accessibility wayfinding standards in this country. There are only guidelines. What are some components of accessible wayfinding? I've only scratched the surface in this presentation. It is important to understand that no transit agency in this country strictly adheres to the following requirements. We people with disabilities have much work to do. Bus stop placement. Bus stops should be placed near accessible, safe intersections. They should be easy to locate and should not be jammed up against news racks, parking signs, trees, garbage cans, and other obstacles. They should have clear paths of travel and should not be placed in congested areas. We still don't know how to easily identify floating bus stops that are placed near boarding islands in the middle of the street. Some jurisdictions are installing accessible audible beacons to allow blind people to cross safely to these bus stops. Transit agencies must insist that all jurisdictions within their service areas comply with these requirements. It is the ultimate responsibility of these agencies to ensure that riders have easy and efficient access to all bus stops. Finally, transit agencies must provide one standardized pole for all bus stops. Bus stop displays. All bus stop displays should be easily reachable and fully accessible. They should provide both visual and audible information. The audible information should be identical to what is offered visually. The information should be provided in several languages. Bus stop and train locations. Customer service agents must be adept at giving clear, accurate information about where bus stops and train stations are located, including transfer points, entrances, and exits. Wherever possible, they should provide cardinal compass directions. They must also give information about transferring from one vehicle to another and at which stops and/or stations. Automated computer and phone information systems. In addition to accessible websites and mobile applications, several transit authorities offer automated computer and phone information systems, such as the Transportation Authority of River City, TARC, in Louisville, Kentucky, Minnesota Valley Transportation Authority, MVTA, in Minneapolis, and Valley Transit Authority, VTA, in Santa Clara County. Using such systems, riders can obtain a list of all routes, choose a route and follow it virtually in either direction, and choose a stop to hear expected arrival times. Those systems are available 24/7, 365. Tactile bus stop indicators in the built environment. Countries such as Australia have for decades embedded tactile directional bars in sidewalks to alert blind people that they have reached a bus stop. These bars, which are easily felt underfoot or cane, lead to adjacent bus stop poles that contain accessible displays. The U.S. is just beginning to adopt these essential tactile bus stop indicators. Smartphone applications. Many countries and several U.S. transit authorities have adopted smartphone applications that map bus stops, light rail, and subway stations digitally and convert this data into easy-to-follow, accurate, audible directions for locating bus stops, light rail stations, and subway entrances and exits. These directions guide people within and around stations to and from platforms and surrounding points of interest, such as stores and coffee shops. The Washington, D.C. Metropolitan Area Transportation Authority, or WMATA, is currently making its entire metro system and 1,000 bus stops fully accessible thanks to a digital mapping application called Waymap, developed in the UK, which requires no internet, Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, or GPS. It is intended for everyone, not just people with disabilities. Waymap, www.waymapnav.com, relies only on the sensors built into smartphones. Accessible websites and mobile applications. It is essential that websites and mobile applications be fully accessible and work with all screen readers and magnification programs on computers, tablets, and smartphones. Braille and raised print plates or placards. It is essential to affix Braille and raised print placards on bus stop displays for people who are deafblind, because Braille and raised print take up much more space than regular print. The most pertinent and relevant information must be included, such as bus numbers, which is not an easy decision to make. These placards should be affixed to all bus stops. High contrast indicators and large print. People with low vision require high contrast bus stop indicators and large print information on bus stop displays. Signage for wheelchair users. Bus stop signage should be low enough to allow wheelchair users to easily read it. In most cases, redundancies should be provided so that ambulatory riders don't have to bend down to read it. Bus stop information for cognitively disabled individuals. Some people with cognitive disabilities require symbol or pictorial-oriented bus stop information. bus stop information for deaf people. Many deaf and hard of hearing people prefer video-oriented bus stop information as opposed to document-oriented information. Let's turn now to ADA paratransit. Paratransit riders gave up their right to spontaneity when ADA paratransit was established. That's because paratransit riders can't come and go whenever and wherever they wish. In fact, ADA paratransit has many glaring inequalities. Only paratransit riders have to make advance reservations. No same-day rides for them. Only paratransit riders have to pay at least twice as much as non-disabled fixed route transit riders. Only paratransit riders have to have no predictability. They never know exactly when they will be picked up or dropped off. They don't know how many people will share the ride with them or how long it will take to reach their destination. Hundreds of thousands of disabled people throughout the country are routinely denied paratransit altogether if they don't live or work within 3/4 of a mile of a functioning bus route or rail line. The trend now is to offer paratransit on demand through a transportation network company such as Uber, Lyft, or a TNC specifically designed to provide paratransit, such as USURV, that's U-Z-U-R-V. Some transit agencies offer supplemental paratransit on demand, while others are trying to replace the current extremely inequitable and outmoded ADA paratransit model with paratransit on demand. The Transportation Research Board, which is affiliated with the National Academy of Sciences, has recently published a report on 18 jurisdictions that offer paratransit on demand. Final thoughts. Please keep in mind that ADA requirements are minimal and inadequate. They are not the floor. They are the ceiling. We must expect and demand that all local and regional transit agencies in California and throughout the nation provide programs, services, facilities, and vehicles that are well above ADA requirements and nothing less. All wayfinding information technologies and strategies, whether based on products, services, or procedures, must be developed with ongoing input from all communities intended to be served by transit agencies, including traditionally underserved communities, communities of color, economically disadvantaged communities, older adults, people with disabilities, individuals and organizations that provide support or services within these communities, and professionals with expertise in areas relevant to accessible wayfinding and transportation. California's and the nation's public agencies can and must do better in promoting and providing full public transit accessibility and ensuring equity for people with disabilities and older adults. As eminent accessibility consultant Ron Brooks has stated, people with disabilities should be able to take all forms of public transit with no more effort, time, and cost than people without disabilities. In closing, it is time for the public transit industry to accept the fact that only we people with disabilities, who comprise some 20 to 25% of the nation's and California's population, have the necessary lived experience and the knowledge of what is required to make the world fully accessible to us. And now we'll open it for questions and comments.
Okay, Warren, please go ahead and unmute.
Can you hear me, David?
Yep.
Yes, sir.
Good. I'm glad I can actually log on today. Okay, so I want to ask you a question about what your thoughts are about how to navigate all of these different transit agencies that, for example, just to give an example, we have 27 different transit agencies in the Bay Area. And it is can be exhausting to try to grapple with 27 different transit agencies, and that doesn't even include the MTC. So how do you get to the point of grappling with all of these different agencies and their specific requirements and their specific issues with regard to all that you've outlined today?
Well, what I suggested, actually before, several years ago, there is a professor of engineering who specializes in wayfinding for people with disabilities. His name is Roberto Manducci, and he's on the board of the Vista Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired in, well, they're in Palo Alto, San Jose, and Santa Cruz now. Anyway, he was willing to work with me and others to, we were thinking of organizing an international wayfinding conference, but then, as you know, Warren, I got involved in other issues with the Transit Justice Project, with the East Bay Center for the Blind in Berkeley. But what I'm thinking of, and I've mentioned this to people at the Metropolitan Transportation Commission here in the Bay Area, is maybe we can organize a Bay Area wayfinding conference and invite people who specialize in this and accessibility and invite representatives of the various agencies, so that we can have discussions in one central place and we can begin working on a central clearinghouse of ideas and exchanges so that all those agencies you're talking about perhaps could work together. What do you all think about something like that? And of course, in your areas throughout the state, some of you have, you know, one transit authority, right? Like LA Metro, but you also have, like in LA County, you have 43 different operators. It might be a good idea to bring these folks together and start, you know, working together and organizing some central way or of organizing so that people can share ideas in one place and, you know, work together and try to standardize the various requirements locally and regionally.
Okay, next we have Steve Mendelson. Please unmute.
Hi, Steve. Hi. Good morning. Thanks, Debbie. Thanks, Andrea. Debbie, I know that, I believe I'm correct in saying there's nothing in federal law that would prevent on-demand service from being undertaken either as an experiment or as a long-term solution, and I know that various jurisdictions have tried it. I'm quite curious, therefore, to know, is there anything in state law that would prevent it? And if I'm correct in believing there is not, what could we do to advocate for it to be undertaken regionally, experimentally, otherwise?
People who are kind of in the know about this, Steve, are suggesting that we work on this locally and regionally first, that we approach our various agencies and just, you know, suggest to them very politely at first that they provide services above and beyond the ADA. Ron Brooks has said, for instance, that they're used to a certain culture and consistency, and they like to abide by federal rules. And some agencies are willing to go a little bit above them, but others just say, okay, we're meeting what the law requires, and that's all we have to do. There are people on the state level who feel, there's a woman named Debbie Toth who runs an organization called Choice in Aging, and she is the chair of this transportation subcommittee of the DACLAC. And she fervently believes that we need to have statewide standards, not just on paratransit, but on many other aspects of accessible transportation for all people with disabilities and older adults. So I don't think there's anything. Gene, do you know if there's anything in state law that would prevent agencies from offering transportation on demand? I know as ADA paratransit rather than just a supplemental service.
No, I'm not aware of any specific regulations. No.
And it would likely be much cheaper. Yes.
Oh yeah. We hear like from our districts here in the Bay Area that rides cost like, and we're talking about, you know, using these gas guzzling vans and all of their very insufficient navigational and scheduling software, rides can cost anywhere like up to 60, 70 bucks a ride, as opposed to like maybe 20, 30 or 40 bucks a ride. They don't realize how, well, some of them do, but many people don't realize how expensive ADA paratransit is, just to operate.
Thanks.
Sure. Anyone else, Andrew?
David, you don't have any hands at the moment, but probably you will, because if I say that.
I would like to know if people have any comments about the barriers that they face currently, or that, you know, we all face in using public transit. And if you have any possible ideas for and solutions for improving public transit accessibility.
Gene has his hand raised.
Okay.
So go ahead, Gene.
David, this is not what your last question was, but going back a little bit, I thought that was a extremely well done presentation you just gave us. Very well researched, and I have to compliment you on that. Some of the things you mentioned, I think the challenge is, you know, like the placement of a newspaper stands, etc. Those basically end up in the local communities' ordinances, and the state establishing requirements. It'll be a challenge to do that, but not impossible. I think that is something, when it comes to the built environment aspects, is putting together proposals that can be taken to Division State Architect to see if something could be done. Now, like newspaper stands, since they are movable, that doesn't go under the building code. It has to be something that's affixed.
Okay.
But and that's the thing, is the difference between Caltrans and the Division of State Architect. They have differences, but there's things that just fall between the cracks and end up in the local level, just like, which is off topic, but natural signs that Jeff, Tom, and I are working on for e-scooters. There is no state agency that has any authority to deal with that. It doesn't fall under the building code. So this is where really it seems like I'm suggesting slowing down the process. I'm not, but there's a need for funding for research to look at many of these issues to substantiate them.
Yep.
And that's going to be hard, but is really badly needed. And that's how you'll get some of the culture in the transit industry to change, if we have scientific research behind it. And yet that does not negate what the end users have to say, what they experience, reality, usability. And I guess the last thing is, I strongly support, you know, using smartphones and all that technology, but we need to still insist that the physical access is built into the environment, at the transit station, so forth. Those features, some of them you listed, what happened in Asia and New Zealand, etc. Because if your smartphone dies on you, Wi-Fi. So I'm just saying, these are a variety of things, but I think possibly it's looking at some of the things that we need to build on, not forgetting that there are people that don't have smartphones or that can use that technology for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think a lot of people are so enamored with smartphones that they forget. I just listed the information, but I absolutely agree with you. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you about the built environment. I think that that's too often ignored, you know?
Yeah, and just one thing. Yeah. There is something that possibly, and I'm Sacramento County Department of Transportation is going to be doing a pilot project, if funding comes through, that is a software package that you'll have where you can plot where you're going. And it will be, you can find out where the temporary construction sites are, plot you for detours around it, sidewalks to help you locate where there are curb ramps, where there are accessible pedestrian signals. And that's something we hope will be funded this coming year. And when I have something of substance to share, I'll let you know. But it's something I think will be pretty exciting for people. Thank you.
And again, this is on is with a smartphone, right? So that you
yes,
would have to.
You will be able with a smartphone, yes. Mm-hmm. And you will also be able to do it, you know, with your computer so you can plot it beforehand. And then you're out there in the field in real time, and it's kind of modeled after there's something motors have, I think it's Waze.
Uh-huh, right. That, oh, wow.
And then you also, as you come along and you find something, you can input and say, update it. Here, I just found there's a closure. It's just gone in place, or there's a tree that's just fallen down so that you can put information in yourself.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that is great. Public. Wow. Yeah. So do you think, Gene, that it would be advisable to work with the local and regional agencies rather than worrying about the state? I was just talking about, I don't know if you know Debbie Toth, who's with Choice in Aging. She's the chair of this transportation subcommittee for the DACLAC. Jeff knows her. And she is absolutely adamant about we must have statewide standards. And I don't know if that's always going to work. I mean, I think you're right. That's going to be difficult because of the lack of agencies that deal with these things and you know, correct codes and that kind of thing. And so, you know.
Statewide, it's ideal to do statewide, but I think in some of the things like what you folks are doing in the Bay Area, get those established, and therefore it's a model, and then the state can look to it. That happened with the dispatch elevators. San Francisco worked on that, and the Division of State Architect almost adopted everything as is. So it started locally and influenced it. So, I mean, that works.
Okay.
Thank you.
This is cool. No, this is great, Gene. I mean, you've been an invaluable asset all these decades, you know, and a lot of states don't have folks like you, you know, and that's unfortunate. So they,
okay. Frank, please go ahead and unmute.
Hello. Let me know if I have background noise here. I'm outdoors. Anyway, I want to first commend everybody on this call for getting up on a Saturday morning.
That's right.
Remember that this call, being on this call, you are volunteering for CCB, and that has a value of around $25 an hour. So just by being on this two-hour call, you're basically doing the equivalent of making a $50 donation to CCB, and I thank you very much for doing that. Also, I want to commend most of the folks on this call, at least of the voices I recognize. You are already advocates, and you're already up to your eyeballs in advocacy, and that matters too. So big round of applause to all of you. One thing I want to mention, though, is that I'd like to encourage all of us to come out of the convention and reach out to the rest of our chapter members to get involved in advocacy. And I know the 20/80 rule and all that, and I know, you know, I live in a chapter, so I get the people that we deal with in our chapters who don't seem to want to do anything. But I want to encourage us to encourage our members, all of them, to get in the habit of attending public meetings. You know, they may say, well, I'm not an advocate, I'm not a speaker, or what do I, that doesn't matter. What matters is that our bodies are in those rooms, in the front row, so that those people with power are actually looking at us and seeing us and realizing that we actually do exist, not just in theory. And then, you know, if we can make some comments during public comment, that's gravy. But just being there, as Woody Allen said, 85% of success is just showing up. So we need to encourage more of our members to just show up, even if that's all they want to do. That's good. Second comment is, David, I hope you can get your article published in the DC and the Braille Forum. I think it's a landmark document that really should influence our advocacy policy statewide and nationally, because it's so thorough and so well organized, and it really lays out the issue in one place in a way that I don't think I've seen anywhere else. So I think we need to get that out there.
Sharon says it's too long, so we'll divide it up.
we have fine. Lots of different rules for the BC though. So yeah. Remember,
as far as long articles, you know, you all know that I'm about a third of the way through a series that'll take probably a couple of years.
That's right.
And so, you know, if it takes us a year to get that article published all the way through, fine.
Yeah. Articles have been divided before. They could certainly be divided.
Sure.
That's not,
absolutely.
And just like FYI for kudos for you, David, Bob Acosta has already echoed before Frank even said it, the comment of it needs to be in the BC. So there you go.
We actually did put a part of the presentation in the BC a couple of issues ago. And Susan was very impressed with it. So that was good. She was really pleased with it. So but I will work on a document and do something, because I agree, it needs to be published. What was exciting, and Frank is on the Policy Advisory Council of our Metropolitan Transportation Commission here in the Bay Area. And what was exciting to me is that for the first time, people were realizing, hey, we're talking about specifics of accessibility. We're not just sort of talking around it or above it or about it. We're talking through it.
Yeah.
And that was really interesting.
What inclusion actually looks like. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And we needed to do more of that. And that's what I was trying to spark, you know, and I hope that this continues, because it's very, very important. Yeah. I mean, I've been on the advisory committee of AC Transit now for a year, and we have talked about wayfinding, but they have not dealt with one issue of the 20 issues that the San Francisco Chapters Advocacy Committee provided them. It's just startling. And I see, Frank, how you struggle with the Policy Advisory Council, you know, trying to get the MTC, not the council, but the MTC to really understand and work on accessibility. And I think we should be very grateful for the fact that you have that stamina and patience, and that you are working with the MTC on this issue, but they just don't seem to get it.
Yeah. And I still think the effort is worth it, because when I look at, you know, what's happened in the last 2 years, you know, clearly, you know, we want to get a lot more done, but we've seen some movement.
That's right.
It's worth doing.
You make a few steps, you know, forward, and that's what's important. And you just continue to make those steps, no matter how small.
And especially since, you know, with certain people, we've made more than a few steps.
Uh-huh.
You know, there are certain people who clearly learned a lot and are definitely our friends.
You know? Yes, and we have allies now. More allies, which is important. And the equity officer of the MTC, Keena Miller, is very keen on this. And of course, we have the one and only accessibility planner, Brendan Shelton, which is kind of shocking with a staff of nearly 300 people. But she is certainly on our side. So, yeah, we are live.
And David, you got several hands raised.
Okay,
here.
Let's move on.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, yes, sorry about that, host.
Just a quick point of order. We always take the hands of people who have not spoken yet. So, Steve, I do see your hand, but I'm going to go with those people who have not spoken, and then I will come back around to those who have spoken previously to give everyone a chance. Christy Crespin, happy birthday, my dear.
Happy birthday, girl.
You may unmute.
Wow.
Happy birthday.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Just a second. Okay, so here are some of my thoughts.
Okay.
So, Jean, I really, I know that the state regulations are a, you know, kind of idealistic, but oh my goodness, we really need some minimum standards. Right now, I don't think we have any kind of standards, and everybody's in their own thiefdom. And that was borrowed from rehab days, from district administrators. spoken as a rehab counselor. But everybody has their own thiefdom, and they're all vying for the buck.
Yeah, we can continue on, yeah.
Yeah. And so what? I do believe that we need to have innovation, and yes, we need to apply for grants and things, but we need a minimum standard. It's ridiculous that we have to pre-qualify for every dang county in California, every transit system. I should be able to just go up to Sacramento and I'm in a statewide registry.
Amen, Christy.
Okay.
I'll support you there.
Okay. So number two, we don't know how to advocate. I mean, I'm a social worker. I know about advocating, but this is not my expertise, my area of expertise. I need training. I need to know where to go. Hold my hand. Bring me where I need to be so that I can, you know, ask those hard questions that I ask, so I can make those statements and, you know, so we can get up in the front rows. I don't even know. You know, the websites are so hard to navigate. I'm on the Highland City Council website, but they hide things. It's so hard to find things that I don't have the energy. When are those public meetings? How do we find those apps? That app for Sacramento sounds wonderful. Our agencies lie. They lie to us. They tell us they're going to give us things and they don't. I don't even use Access. I mean, I think since I've retired almost 2 years ago, May, I've used Access. I could count on my hand the number of times I've used Access, because the Uber and Lyft are so much more expedient. I want to be able to use the Access service. Why can't we have them more transparent and on demand, so that we can make same day? I think that's ridiculous that we can't make same day. I think finally, I want to use the buses. I want to travel on the buses. It's so difficult to travel on the buses now. Half the time, the annunciators in the buses either don't work, they don't turn them on, or you can't understand them because you're blasted by all of the other advertising announcements that, you know, block or conceal our announcements. We need to really focus on more accessibility on our fixed routes. So those are just some of my thoughts. And David, yes, publish, publish, publish. I plan on sending out your transcript to my chapter members, and I also plan on sending it to my social work constituencies. I belong to several social work advocacy organizations, so it's going out to them. Thank you,
Christy. What I sent you was a recent presentation that I made a few weeks ago, which is a little different from what I did today, and I will.
Can you send today's?
Yeah, exactly. I will work on that. I promise. I just add new things as I hear things or do more research or whatever. And I really appreciate all your points. I agree with you 100%. I mean, it's just it is nuts that we. I know people who have literally not been able to get any transportation at all because they can't use the bus or rail, and they need paratransit, but they don't live near a fixed route.
My cousin lives in a boarding house, mm-hmm. through no choice of his own. He cannot walk. I mean, right now, please pray for him. He's in the hospital. Wow. He is a heart patient, a stroke patient. He needs Access services. And he's nowhere near a bus.
Mm-hmm. So
he can't fault of his own. Right.
Yeah. So he's a shut-in,
basically. And he's on limited income. Yeah.
It's cruel. It's cruel.
It is.
Yeah. Okay. So to put that in the Civil Rights Act is really insane. Yeah. Thank you, Christy. Wow.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, next we have Brandon, our new Fresno chapter member.
Hey, Brandon.
Good morning, Brandon.
Hello, and thank you guys for having me. And, you know, this is just getting my feet wet, but small, quick background from myself. You know, I work for Valley Center for the Blind and out of the Fresno office, and I actually live in Tulare, California. And when I first started working for Valley Center for the Blind, I would travel with public transportation from Visalia to Fresno. I'd get up at 3 a.m. every morning, get on the inner county or the county transportation, and then transfer to city transportation. And I would walk into work about 7:20 every morning. So from 4 a.m., like 4 a.m. bus departure to 7:20 every morning for about 6 months straight, Monday through Friday. Not just the, you know, city transportation, but even the accessibility for county to county. Like the blessing that I had was there was a direct line, at least to the city I needed to go to, right? But that's because there is a large university there. So really that's to get university students who either can't drive, don't drive. That's their intention. And it just happened to benefit me for the time that I needed it. Now I'm blessed to be able to work from home and remotely. But I think that could also be, which I wish I had solutions. I mean, I hate having a problem and not being able to offer a solution. That's one of the things that I, you know, try not to do. But I don't think that, I don't think that just, you know, I don't think we should be limited to just city, especially when there's situations where somebody's specialist might be in a different city, and you know, taking an Uber for in the rural area, you know, taking a $45 to $60 Uber to go to a specialist because the accessibility isn't there inter-county wise, I think is also.
So you're talking about paratransit, right? That you shouldn't have to transfer from one jurisdiction to another. You should just have a straight ride.
Is that he's talking about county, inter-county transportation. Mm-hmm. We have from Tulare County to Fresno County. That's what we have. And so it's really like that piece. And then, you know, just to kind of piggyback on you, Brandon, it's that rural transit, like, you know, that's another big problem here in the Central Valley that we run into, is rural transit not connecting in the way that it should and could.
And yeah, that's, we need to really focus on rural areas because many of them don't even have transportation networks.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Yeah.
Like using Fresno and Clovis specifically, and I use them kind of together because I think they're separated by a single street that goes all the way down, you know, because that's how close the cities are.
Wow.
But there are these hard limits that cannot be, you know, passed by either one. And one of the big issues that I know Sarah knows very well about is, the inability and difficulties just from getting from Clovis to Fresno, which, you know, our Valley Center for the Blind's facility is, because of the way that they've moved their hard limits over the years, we've gone from being just inside the limit to be able to, you know, have somebody from in Fresno dropped off, and it's, you know, a block away rather than not like a full city block, like a short block, not even. And Clovis riders, because they are two separate entities, their transit systems, would be able to be there. And now it's because of the line changes, it's I think three blocks for the Clovis individuals just to get to our facility, or they even more actually, and or they have to switch.
Right,
entirely, giving that, you know, that 30 minute on each end struggle. And
just for a few blocks.
Yep. But, and so people can be waiting for an hour just between that time. And and I wanted to kind of shift real quick to what Jean was referring to earlier about an application for wayfinding. Some things that I've been looking into and trying to work on as kind of a pet project. In January, there was an announcement that Microsoft, their Soundscape, which is an application that was created by their research team for research purposes. So this application was never intended to be longer than their research goals. It was a wayfinding app that, just like Gene was referring to, you set it up before you go, and it utilized essentially spatial awareness within the app and its communications to cell towers and different Wi-Fi connections to be able to kind of be more specific with navigation in a wayfinding manner. And it was in January, it was announced that they were, it's no longer available on for download. And in June or July, I believe it's going to be taken off of the, all the use is going to be disabled. It won't be able to be used. And I've been talking with some individuals that I know who are longtime friends who have gone to school for programming and stuff, because what they've done, even though they've kind of abandoned this project because their research is completed, they took their source code and put it onto a website called GitHub, which is basically an open source website where if a company has a product and they want to open it up to the world to be able to use, they put it on. Yeah. And that's something I've been trying to establish, how much it would cost to recreate and even potentially improve.
From what I understand, Brandon, that Soundscape is a really good application, but it's mainly used for people who walk,
yes,
rather than pedestrians, rather than ride.
Correct.
It was not intended for that, so it could be adapted for that probably.
And that's what I was thinking as well. Yeah.
David, sorry to interrupt, Brandon.
No worries,
Sarah. We do use it when we ride. It's very helpful, especially with paratransit, because then you know how far away you are from your location. You can put a beacon, and it's really helpful when because some paratransit drivers that you're like held hostage. They won't tell you where you're at. And that's so true. It's something that, I use a lot. Shaneer has used a lot, so and I've heard other folks do too. So it's really a shame that they're getting rid of it. I told Brandon, I hope they're really just waiting to, announce something bigger and better.
And I agree with you, Brandon, because the problem is that people are worried that folks are going to take parts of it for open source and just use part of the code, and they're not going to use the entire app. I know Blind Square, I believe, is thinking on incorporating some of the code. Mm-hmm. So, we'll have to see. And that's great, Sarah. I didn't realize that people were using it for writing. I use it for walking only. So that's great. Yeah. There's a lot of possibilities out there, but I do agree with Gene that we can't ignore the built environment.
Absolutely.
We've got to provide physical cues. And I have to tell you, I've gotten responses from some agencies around here who say, well, racial, because there's been quite a bit of work on racial equity with transit. It's not enough, and there's a lot more that needs to be done. But Ron Brooks claims that there has been very little, if any, work on equity for people with disabilities in the industry, in the transit industry. And I've heard people say things like, well, with racial equity, there's no financial outlay, but for you, we've got to spend millions on accessibility, and that's expensive, and we can't do that. And a few meetings ago, I heard in one committee, someone got up and said, so in other words, financial considerations are more important than protecting and upholding our civil rights. And there was everybody was all quiet. No one knew what to say. It was really.
And one thing to note is, It could be just as financially detrimental if there's enough lawsuits do occur.
That's right.
So it's same side of the same coin, same kind of side of the different coin, whatever the term is. It's basically two sides of the same coin.
let's move on. Are there other hands?
Yeah, we have a couple of other hands.
Thank you.
Appreciate
that. And I don't know, I'm hearing coming on, maybe we should all honor Judy Heumann and have our own sit-in. And I don't know, just thinking, David, we could plan it. Next step is our...
Yeah. I'm there.
All right. Well, next up we have the CCB Fresno chapter president, Ms. Jamie Gibson Barros.
Hi, good morning, everybody.
Hey, hello.
Yeah, I was going to have some of the same conversation as Brandon because we're in the same market. For us, we have a very large rural area. Yeah. And the thing that's impacting us a lot right now is employment services, right? People, that's part of our mission and Department of Rehab's mission is getting people employed and, moving that needle of poverty, and it's out there, but they just can't get there. They qualify. So it's really disheartening. And then, the good thing was, with COVID, telework, that really hit our market, which helped us. But now, for an example, I had clients working towards a telework job, and there were 2,500 applicants, for that same job because it was telework. So I was like, okay, well, we had some great times, but we're struggling. I just wanted to make that comment.
It's because they can't get there. You mean because of transportation? Is that what you're saying?
That's correct.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. They can't get into the bigger cities.
There's a lot of emphasis on counties. Like, there's a whole thing about wanting to coordinate, like with paratransit, on the county level. And I am concerned that they're only focusing on counties. And I like Christy's idea. Hey, I live in a state. If I want to go to, if I want to go to Sacramento or I want to go to LA, I'm obviously paratransit, but probably not take me 400 miles. But I think you know what I mean. That we should be able to go wherever we want in the state, and it shouldn't be restricted to counties. And I think that we're really going to have to work on that level. Some people work in different counties, and they may not be able to go from county to county easily. So I think we need to think about that as well. So
we have it on the recording for you, David, and part of our angle with some of those things could be if there was a statewide network of registrants for paratransit, then there wouldn't be that as much administrative burden on all the separate markets. So, I mean, that's a big thing because, I know personally how much paperwork goes into just sending to another agency. It's a big deal.
Yeah, and I don't think these agencies realize how much money they're wasting. and then all of these interviews, that's another issue about being recertified every 3 or 5 years, which we're going to be talking about during our convention because there's a resolution coming up about that. If you're permanently disabled, why do you need to go through all this? And why do they go through all the administrative expense for it? So they don't realize how much money they're. Well, I said wasting. I should say be more polite and say spending.
Jamie, did you have any more?
Yeah. One last question, a comment. Lately, I've been getting phone calls. Asking for the audible crosswalks. Within our city, and clients or people, they don't really know how we direct them, or they kind of know where to go, but then they get lost. And the last two that came to me was the ADA coordinator for city just said, there's no funding, go to a council meeting. And they're like, I can't even get to the council meeting because I can't cross the street. You know,
you didn't tell me about that, Jamie. Ooh. Oh, Lordy.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. I know. I've got their names and phone numbers. I already told them that you would be reaching out to them. But, I mean, just in general, navigating who to reach out to for the general public who's not part of CCB. Or any other affiliates and organizations, and you know, being able to reach these individuals, you know, of course we have BCB local, we have CCB, you know, but at the same time, if they don't know about us, then they're just sitting there thinking, you know, I'm screwed. I can't walk across the street. I have to be isolated, you know.
I would call every darn city council member, or I would write a letter and tell them, hey, I can't get to this council meeting. I can't cross the street, or there's not a sufficient transit network, or I don't, you know, we need accessible, you know, if the city decides that it is safer to install a pedestrian signal to make the intersection safer, then it should be safer for me as a blind person as well. Because by not doing that, you're discriminating against me. I would make a big fuss about it. In fact, we've been talking about that a lot here in the Bay Area. Because originally what you had is this prioritization where cities would do, they still do, prioritize where you're going to have a signal or if you're going to have a signal. And a lot of people are now saying, no, this isn't acceptable. You've got to have all signalized intersections have to be accessible, because if they're safe for a sighted person, they got to be safe for me. You know, they're, you know, so I think that's a great thing to do. And, you know, we're discussing that, what we can do on a state level. I believe there's going to be a resolution on that as well. So, you know, we have a lot to do. Maybe we need to publish some kind of guide. I don't know, statewide guide on how to advocate. Maybe we need to have some workshops. What do you think, Sarah?
I love it. We got housing, we got transportation, we got all this stuff going. So,
I mean, I'm willing to work on, you know, stuff like that.
And as Frank said, you know, when the convention's over, guys, don't lose interest.
That's right.
You know, keep the momentum going. It's so important. It's so important. All right. And Jamie, were you finished?
Yes, and thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. I didn't want to cut you off. Next up, we have iPhone, and I'm not sure who iPhone is. So if you're on an iPhone and you could be iPhone, go ahead and speak.
Okay, this is Josh.
Hey, Josh.
It's kind of funny. My phone seems to sometimes give my name properly and sometimes not. It doesn't make a lot of sense. but anyway... I wanted to thank you, David, for an excellent presentation. And I wanted to mention something that happens to all of us a lot of times when we're traveling. Shane and I had dinner with Warren recently, and we were traveling back and taking a bus. And we were taking the 72 bus, which I have taken for like the last 20 years or whatever. They moved the stop. I stood there and watched like two or three buses go by. I have enough vision to see when buses go by. And I didn't notice it first because sometimes they just do that. And then one day a bus pulled up and he's like, are you waiting for the 72? And I was like, yeah. Oh, only the 18 stops here now. I was like, oh, thank you for telling me that. And it's like,
oh my goodness.
So where does the 72 stop now? He says across the street, and he pointed the direction. Fortunately, I have enough vision to see where he was pointing to, so I actually knew where to go. But that particular gesture wouldn't have helped someone who didn't have as much vision as
I have. That's right. Yeah. That's where you can come to the advisory committee meetings and mention that, Josh, I think, and write to them. I'll give you the people to write to.
I'd appreciate it because I actually would like, yeah. I'm planning to call AC Transit this week and basically talk to them exactly about that. I'd like info on the people because you know more about transit than I do exactly because I want to let them know that, you know, this is not acceptable. this actually, I'm fortunate in the sense that this particular problem hasn't happened to me before. And I want to like let them know exactly about this.
But yeah, it's happening to lots of people all over the state. I mean, there are agencies now that have been changing bus stops because of COVID and, you know, the new routes that they've established because they've kind of cut their routes and stuff like that. And you know, they don't let people know, or they let them know in visual ways, you know, and they're just not doing their homework. And this is another issue where we have to have standards in this statewide.
They need to actually present it in an accessible way so yeah. people know yeah. how they're changing it. You know,
it's inexcusable. The issues that we've presented to AC Transit over the past year, absolutely none of them have been dealt with. I stood by a parking sign recently for 20 minutes thinking it was a bus stop because it looks exactly like a bus stop pole that I finally found.
One of the ways I can tell it's a bus stop is bus stop poles have these little hole cutouts in the pole design. Mm-hmm. That's how I can tell, or I can tell anyway.
Not all. I mean, but some parking signs use the same poles. Louise Benson or BZ Benson, who's a very well-known O&M authority who we've heard at CCB conventions, says that we need to really push for a standardized pole for bus stops because it's ridiculous. You know, yeah. And those are things that we just need to work on, Josh. We need more people. That's why what Frank says, come to the meetings and advocate.
That's why I try to go to those. Because
it's really essential that we start demanding what's right. People's, you know, I've known people who actually suffer because they can't get to places that they need to go. I mean, really, yeah. really suffer serious issues. Yeah. It's really shocking to me how the transit agencies are so lackadaisical about this. So yeah,
I've paid for Uber and Lyft. I've paid extra money for Uber and Lyft because buses haven't showed up when they're right. supposed to show up for bus or doctors. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, happening all over the state. Yeah.
And if it's not accessible, accessible.
That's what I wanted to share.
What did you say, Sarah? I'm sorry.
I said, if it's not accessible, it's not acceptable.
Yeah, that's right. It's not. That's right. That's
good,
a great
good
model.
Comments, Joshua. Good
Thank comments. You, Josh.
Next up, you have Libby Ostergaard.
All right, Libby.
Hey guys, can you hear me?
We can.
Can you hear me? Okay.
Yep. Now we can.
Well, I may have an in with AC Transit because if he's still there, the young man who runs it is the disability person, is my husband's cousin. So I'm, you know,
if you're it's talking Michael about Tim Ridgway.
Nope. I guess Mike's not there anymore. I was talking about Mike Falcone. I guess he's not there.
He might be. I'll have to check.
Okay. But anyway. He used to be work with the disability.
No, I know the disability staff. There's just two people right now.
Okay. Well, then he must have left that job. Okay.
But he might still be there. So, but, you know, check
I know,
with him.
For me. Yeah. Yeah, I will. I don't take the bus anymore. Because it's just too dangerous because you don't know, you know, with all these homeless and different ones, you don't know what it's like. And as a senior and a woman, you know, who's going alone, we're targets. So I don't take the bus and I use paratransit other than my having, you know, to and from. Mm-hmm. But anyway, and as far as the pedestrian signals, I was on the committee 30 years ago, the city ride committee for ADA here in Fresno, and we were the ones that first started having some pedestrian signals put in certain major areas. We also did the make sure that the railroad crossings were accessible as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is a long, long time project. And when is this advocacy group meeting? I mean, the whatever it is, transportation or whatever it's called. When is it? Because I came in late. So when do they meet?
We haven't organized anything yet. We're just talking now about accessible transportation today. And it was suggested that we have some workshops. And I think that's a great idea.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Great idea.
Well, thanks, Libby, very much.
Thank you, Libby. Next up, we have Jamie again with a comment. And then after Jamie, we have Jean.
Oh, thank you. I just wanted to make a comment on the young lady who was talking about the etiquette and the pointing and things like that. And what we've done or we've taken part in our own community, paratransit, as well as the city of Fresno, that we have a workshop that we participate with the hiring division of new drivers. And we go out there, CCB has been part of this, and the VCB, is we go out there and we do an etiquette training to the brand new drivers that are new hires, and spend a couple hours out with them. And I love this because I even blindfold them, give them canes, and tell them, get on your bus. and teach the drivers how to communicate with somebody who has no vision. You know, without those hand gestures and, the audio cues. So, it's helping in our community. So with workshops or things that we're, you're doing in your own communities, that's been very helpful for us. Thank you.
It's great. Yeah. Good idea.
Good stuff. Next up, Gene.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yep.
Okay, just touching upon a few things. One thing that Frank touched upon way back, and piggybacking on that, and that is with the community involvement, you really need to find out from your city council person or county supervisor or your transit district about if there's any sales tax measure that's underway for transportation, and get involved, get knowledgeable, involved, and see that you can get groups of people to support if it is a good measure, and see that some of that it goes toward access. So that is really something local there. For instance, the accessible pedestrian signals, etc., since they are not yet mandated, and that might change in this week on the federal level. We're waiting for a big announcement.
PROAG,
yeah. But, it's only been waiting for 1995. anyway, but get... Yeah. Each of your communities is supposed to be either city or county governments, that wherever you reside, is to have an ADA transition plan, supposedly. Mm-hmm. And that is something, a mechanism you have to advocate that they amend it to incorporate accessible pedestrian signals. And if it is really really sensitive to the needs, there's like David said, there's priorities for improvements being made to the built environment, not just accessible pedestrian signals, but the improvements they make. But request is supposedly the number one priority. So if somebody submits a request, they're supposed to be responsive. And you need to work on it. So again, that's local, but that you need to work on. And if your community does not have a policy on accessible pedestrian signals, get one done. Back in 1989, I was able to get the unincorporated county of Sacramento to put together a policy that automatically, when new signals were installed, they had to be equipped with APSs. When they got upgraded, they were to have APSs. And number one priority was, if somebody made a request for an APS, they were going to be installed unless there was a technical reason that maybe the technology, the signal technology was so antiquated that it could not accommodate an APS, then that might delay it, but it would be ranked there. And it was at the time, it was the first one that we had heard in the nation. A lot has occurred since then. So that would be something working on a local level to get that. Until there's federal standards mandate that you have APSs. So those are some of the things you can do, the measurable, and the as David and I serve on a the Pedestrian Environmental Access Committee for ACB, and one of the things that's being looked at is actual advocacy training to do with APSs. And looking for specific areas in the country that working closely with the groups of the people to get that advocacy work for in their communities and not learning how to push for it. It's in the infancy discussions. Some of that might be touched upon during the national convention because there will be a presentation about Chicago's case in New York's about APSs. And the very last thing I promise that something you might want to monitor in news, a group of some disabled individuals, including those with vision disabilities, are suing, have a lawsuit against the city and county of Sacramento for the public right-of-way not being cleared with regards to people that are homeless who have taken over the sidewalks and bicycle lanes with their property. There has been incidents where the two guide dog users were forced out into the eight-lane street in the county to try to get because they couldn't go down the sidewalk. And their guide dogs and them nearly have been hit repeatedly trying to go to the grocery store. And so that is a lawsuit that I've been understanding would be, if it they succeed, it would be a landmark suit that could influence the direction there. No one wants to put in jail the homeless or anything, but it's trying to mandate government to keep the sidewalks clear so you can get down it safely to a bus stop or wherever. So that's something else in development. Thank you.
That's great, Gene, because I know where I live here in the Bay Area, there's a whole, you know, people say, you know, we don't want to go against the homeless. They would not support a lawsuit like this here in certain parts of the Bay Area because they believe that homeless have the right because where else are they going to go? And I agree with you. I think the sidewalks have to be clear. We just got to require that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But like in Berkeley, they're not. I can tell you.
Berkeley. The land of everything's accessible, David. What are you talking about?
Yeah, right. The independent living movement. Sorry, you work for an independent living center. What did I say? No, but you know, it's kind of amazing because here in Berkeley, for instance, we have a signal at the corner of University and Martin Luther King. You press the button and all it yells out is wait, which is absolutely totally and it scares the sighted people half to death because they think they have to press the button and they don't. It's just for to activate the accessible APS, but it does. There's nothing, and then we have other signals that chirp and cuckoo, and then we have others. They're totally. There's no standard at all. That's one thing I want to talk to you about, Gene, about standards, because I want to find out what the standard regulations are, and we need to make sure that cities comply with those standards because it's not safe. I've seen people who get mixed up between the chirps and the cuckoos and they almost get hit because they forget which direction is which and all kinds of things. Whereas the fast and slow clicks are a lot easier to use for some people because you know exactly when the watch signal is and when it's not activated. Anyway, do we have anybody else?
Oh, we do. We do. And just FYI for my folks on the phone, you know, in the middle of this, Zoom decided to not give me the allowance to lower your guys' hands. So if you want to try to hit *9, so that would be Eugene. And next up, we have one of CCB's favorite lawyers, as well as the immediate past first dude, Mr. Stephen Mendelson.
the incredible diffuseness of our issues is graphically demonstrated this morning. We've talked about the urgent issues of paratransit, public transit, people who live in non-transit supported areas, wayfinding, sidewalk access. So we have these tremendous range of issues. Our ranks in terms of people who are available to advocate are obviously small. Our political power is limited, and the number of entities with decision-making authority who we have to advocate for and with is fragmented and numerous. So I ask myself, in that light, is there anything that we could do, any one thing that we could do that would dramatically change the situation, that would create a constituency for accessible transportation broadly, and that would change the legal context on a broad-based way? And my answer is yes. This may sound crazy, but I think that the only real solution is to get the state law changed so that legal inability to drive is categorized as a disability under state law.
Ooh.
I like that, Steve.
The only way.
Yeah.
Ah.
So you get rid of this whole business with linking characters.
Where'd it go, Steve?
It gets rid of everything. It gets rid of everything.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, because you know how many people.
And it is a disability. It's inability to drive is responsible for more collateral things that are recognized as disabilities, for more waste of public funds, and for more human suffering than almost anything else in this country right now.
Wow.
Nursing home admissions. The primary factor in nursing home admissions is loss of the ability to drive.
That loss of independence.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And I know that loss of independence because I lived it. And believe me, it's really weird when you're like, oh, I can't go out the door and go to Taco Bell. You know, it's 22 years old. It's like, I want a burrito, but I can't go get it.
One of the things that is really amazing, Sarah and Steve, is that I talk to people who are losing their vision. And the worst thing of all, they say, is not always the low vision or the blindness, which I don't want to underestimate the problem so that they face, but it's this getting on paratransit and being herded around and one size fits all, and they can't go where they want, they can't change, you know, they hate it, they resent it, that just hurts them even more.
Because so we need to bring in all the constituencies, the elder groups, into a petition campaign to find a sponsor. It won't pass this year. It won't pass next year.
No.
But if you work on it for 2 or 3 years, I think it can be done.
Steve, I'm going to, if you don't mind, I want to introduce you to Debbie Toth, who's with Choice in Aging, Contra Costa County. And she's working on the state level. Do you know her? I don't know if you know her, but you really should talk to her. I think she might be really interested in that.
I'd love to. Absolutely.
Okay. I will do that because she's the state chair of the Subcommittee Transportation Committee of DACLAC, and so she's really heavily involved in state affairs. So
great.
I will do that.
I'm the state chair of the Freelance Troublemakers.
Well, hey, that's what we need, and with the legal brains and
I want to join.
Yeah,
love it. Sign me up.
Yeah, that's
great. David, your presentation was great. By the way, your presentation was really great.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
David, just so you know, we're at 10:27, and we got a couple more hands.
Okay, let's move on.
All right, we have another Central Valley folk. We got Mr. Aaron Espinoza, who is the Blind Student President.
Hey there, can you guys hear me?
Yep,
we can.
Yeah, so I had a comment and a question. So like,
sure.
Yeah, so the comment is, I think that was his name was Brad. He was talking about, like, I think he had to get up at like 3 a.m. to like catch his bus and stuff. Like,
oh, Brandon, yeah.
Oh, Brandon, sorry. Yeah. Yeah, so like one of the reasons I don't go to school in person and just take virtual classes, because it takes longer for me to get to from my house to college than like all my classes combined, a couple of them combined. So it just takes too damn long to travel. So I just wanted to make that comment. And also about like the signs and stuff, the accessible crossing signatures. Like, what about for like the deafblind, people that have hard of hearing? Like, isn't there someone like have Braille on them?
They have Braille and they have a vibrating arrow on the latest ones. So they can feel it and then know when the walk sign's on, supposedly. That's the theory, at least.
Yeah. What about, can someone correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember reading, I think it's in Japan, they have like some kind of like tactile, like kind of mark. So it kind of guides you, like if you ever steer off, kind of in the middle, you know, like the two lines, if you have been able to see, or if you should know, like
you're supposed to say. You mean the white line in the center of the crosswalk? That is also being talked about, and I think some cities are doing it. It's been more used in Japan and I think parts of Europe than here. We're really behind in the U.S. I don't quite understand why, but we really are.
Supposedly in Brazil, like they have a lot of tactile stuff, like on their airports. Like it's in the constitution, like to help out. Like I think it's the disabled, but I forgot what it was. But yeah, I remember reading in Japan they have like some kind of thing for. So you won't steer off, like kind of, you can stay straight.
Can learn from Brazil? My goodness, I'm just kidding. But you know, I'm being sarcastic. There's a lot to look at. In fact, I've been looking at something called the Zero Project, folks. It's sponsored by the United Nations. It's called the Zero Project, and it's designed. It's sponsored by the UN, their office in Vienna, and they have collected thousands of accessibility policies and best practices throughout the world, and they honor several of them every year at an annual conference. And I just found out about them.
What is it called? Or what?
Zero Project, Z-E-R-O Project. .org. Yeah.
That sounds like some kind of military thing. I'm afraid of it.
He's talking about the bar tiles. That's what he's talking about.
Is that what you're talking about? You're talking about the tactile and high contrast indication, like in subway platforms, right?
I might be talking about that. I know it's big in Japan. Sorry.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. That's cool. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Before us. Yeah.
And next up, you have Miss Shayna Ray.
All right.
Hi. Going off of what the last person was saying, as far as is taking public transit to school, I did court reporting school at the College of Marin, and while I was going in person, it took 2 hours each way to get there from El Cerrito, from Contra Costa County to Marin County, right across the bridge. It's 19 miles. It took 2 hours, you know, each way. And then they finally switched it to online classes. It was so nice to just get up at 8 o'clock in the morning and sign in on Zoom. The other thing I wanted to mention is on consistency. I really like some buses in AC Transit have a button on the pole, like, you know, by the seat you're sitting at. Yeah. And it's really nice to just be able to press that button. But most buses seem to have, you're supposed to pull some sort of cord. And I have no idea where that is. And so I asked the bus driver to let me know when my stop is. Mm-hmm. And some of them are really nice about it. But then some of them are like, well, you were supposed to ring the bell. You didn't ring the bell.
Ooh.
And so it would be really nice if there was some sort of consistency where I knew like where the how to request a stop.
The cord is on top of the window. You got to reach up, stand up and find it.
Window. Okay.
Yes. It's really ridiculous. It's so ridiculous because people who don't have that dex, you know, that strength in their hand, they there's no way they can use it.
Somebody showed me at one point, another passenger showed me that if there's a seat up that you can, if you pull on that thing that pulls the seat down, it rings the bell. It doesn't always work.
Yeah.
So it would be really nice if there was some consistency there.
And what we're seeing and what we're seeing here and illustrating is the lack of accessibility. And all these agencies talk about, they're so proud of all, and some of these committee members have been on the committee for like 20 years, 30 years, and they just kiss up, frankly, to these agency people. And it really is, well, to put it bluntly, nauseating to see, because there's very little accessibility. There's a lot of talk. And what we need is more people to go to these meetings, like Frank said, and say, look, stop talking and make these, you know, make your transit network accessible. We're tired of it. You know, and we need to do it. We need to pack the meeting with, you know, lots and lots of people. I mean, I hate to say it, but that's the only way it's going to happen. They will not listen otherwise. And they don't listen to us, and we're members of the committee. They don't do anything. They talk about it all the time. I don't want to harp on it, but this is something that goes on nationwide. And we've got to, you know, and unfortunately, we've got to make, you know, when I see people suffer in any way because of the lack of accessibility, then that really gets me really upset. You know, if it was just a matter of, well, it takes a few extra minutes, blah, but when you're talking about hours, and you can't get to your work or your school or whatever, and you know, you shouldn't have to do that if no one else has to do that. You know, so, you know, anyway, well, I'm off my sofa.
I used to have to get up at 5:30 a.m. to make sure I got the class.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. I'll get off my soapbox, but
and you have two more counts. We got about 10 more minutes. And
all right,
you know, one thing we haven't touched on, David, but we may want to at some point, not today, is school buses too. That's a whole other
part of transportation.
Yeah. So we may want to think about looking at that as well. Next up, we are going back down to Southern California, and we have Miss Christy Crespin, the birthday girl.
Yay! Woo!
And the president of California Diabetics in Action, whose meeting is at 1:30, and I hope you all join. Shameless plug. And I'm also local chapter president of Active Blind Inland Valleys, and I'm running for the board again. But anyway, two things. We have a poll where the bus, where the traffic light is, and if you are on one side of the poll, you push the button, and it's for one major cross street. But if you're on the other side of that same pole at right angles, but who knows, because it's round, and people with ROP probably get me when I say, I don't know where I am, and straight is whatever's in front of me, not necessarily somebody else's straight. and so how do you know which street you're crossing? You don't.
In other words, you don't have two poles.
No, it's one.
See, that's a, pole. I hate that. I hate it.
One pole, two buttons. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but my, you know, this has been such a wonderful discussion. What are our action steps? Where are we going from here? Thank you.
I hope Gene will reinvigorate the Committee on Access and Transportation, because really that's what we need. We need it very badly, and then maybe we can organize some workshops, and maybe we can hopefully consider publishing or trying to figure out how we can provide more information on how people can find out about the meetings and, you know, what's going on with transportation. I mean, like here, you can sign up in the Bay Area for various agencies and get updated information by email. And there are ways to call in, I think, though I haven't explored them. So, you know, that I'm just thinking of possibilities, but I would like us to follow up. Yeah,
definitely. I think that we're in that follow through. We need to make sure that we do follow through.
Any ideas? But I hope we can work this out, because I don't want to drop it. It's too important. Okay.
Absolutely. All right. And I'm thinking this may be your last hand.
Yes.
We have our newest CCB member, Mr. Brandon Eslick.
Sorry, I'm back again. I just wanted to say, you know, for as much as we can kind of harp on and how easy it is to harp on you know, drivers and their inability to understand, or the ignorance, the not knowing. I just want to say that for every, you know, 2 to 3 not good or just average, you know, drivers, there is that golden apple in the bunch who has just been, it's like, wait, you know what you're supposed, like what you could do, even though it's not what you're necessarily, you know, it's what you're supposed to do, not what they've been taught, but they, you know, they go that extra mile, yes, you know, for the average, you know, driver. And I can tell you from personal experience, when you get that golden apple, it's definitely a breath of fresh air. And so it's not impossible, is
right.
I know we're trying to keep this on a very positive note.
I think, Brandon, that also you can't just pin it on the drivers. You have to, mm-hmm. you have to expect that accessibility specialists and management and staff will be, yes, involved in providing information as well. Yes. Because to blame it just on the drivers there, you know, I'm not going to give them excuses, but yes, we need driver training, and we can work on that as well. I attended a driver training session recently and talked about the concerns of blind people. And so there are ways to deal with this. And I agree with you. There are many drivers who are very good.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Which is, you know, when I was going back and forth with my long morning trips, morning and afternoon trips, mm-hmm. having those that the golden apple driver, it always made the trip feel like it wasn't, right, nearly as long. And, you know, that's something I just wanted to say, because I'm sure, you know, what there's certain times when, you know, especially when if it's a long trip where you get on that first name basis, and mm-hmm. they don't just feel like, you know, it's just, you know, the driver, you know, it's, no, this is, his name's Sam. He's, you know, he's got a family. He likes to talk to me about my family.
Right.
And he cares that I'm getting from point A to point B safely and effectively as best as he can help me. And, you know, so there's definitely a lot of good. And I think there's a lot more ways to go, a lot further we can go.
Thank you, Brandon. Sarah, you. We have 4 minutes or 3 minutes. Do we have anybody else?
That was the last hand. And so I was wondering, David, if you would give Gene like 60 seconds to do a shameless plug for his Gene's Yellow Brick Road happening.
Absolutely. Gene, go ahead.
Okay. And if I put you on the spot, Gene, I'm sorry.
Okay. Saturday morning, April 1st. At the CCB convention, we will have from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Kind of a simulation of two type of situations in the built environment. It will occur in the rear parking lot of the hotel.
Cool.
And first of them, we will have two vendors. That one that has what are called pedestrian channeling devices. These are used to get you through temporary construction sites. You're probably familiar with it when you, in urban settings where you go down the sidewalk and there's construction and yep. you're blocked, and then you're out to the, you have to go into the street
yep.
well, and go around. Well, they will have their showing you what is the state of the art of these pedestrian channeling devices. And another company will have their product. I have had a conversation with them yesterday called MCO Light, which is a audible device that it picks up your physical proximity within 15 feet and alert you that you're coming to a construction site and what you're supposed to do and go down. And,
cool.
And this is all programmed. It's not mandated in the manual and uniform traffic control devices, but it is an optional thing. And there's we have been pushing on a state and national level to have it more utilized. The other thing is what's called kind of simulate a raised protected cycle track, bicycle lane, and with the adjoining sidewalk. and what devices that are out there that can help delineate the separation between this bicycle lane from the pedestrian right away. And we'll have a trapezoid material that is being used in San Francisco and in a project for Sacramento, and detectable warnings that help you. We simulate as a mid-block crossing to get to a floating bus stop.
All right. So wonderful.
So that's
thanks, Gene. This is great. We're going to end now. I'm sorry to cut you off, Gene, because this is exciting news.
It was finished. Thank you.
I would love the information. So if you could send it to me, I want to get it to all the different agencies. This is absolutely fantastic. If we can get videos also, that would be wonderful. Thanks, everybody.
Call NPR. Call NPR. Yeah. Get on national news.
Well, we don't have a public relations apparatus right now, fortunately. But we need to stop. It's 10:45, and I want to thank everybody. This has been a fantastic discussion. It's really been great.
Thank you.
Thanks, Andrea and Sarah, for moderating. I know Andrea had to step away for the chapter meeting, and I want to thank Sarah for sticking with us, and thanks, everybody, for being here today.
All right.
Thank you, David.
Thank you. Bye-bye.